With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff, and I can see a man. Please tell everyone your name.
Today, I'm going to be the Duke of New York, I think.
Okay. Is that a real position?
Yeah, well, it is. It certainly is. Especially if you've watched the film that we're going to talk about, Mr. Cupboard.
And what benefits does it bring?
Well, various benefits. The main one being that you're allowed to have chandeliers on the front of your car.
Yep, which is, to be honest, probably the best thing about being a duke, I would say.
Of course it is. Definitely is. So there's a little hint about what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, I mean,
a little tiny hint.
Unless people haven't looked at the name of the podcast.
Which
they're going to be talking about today.
People might like a bit of a surprise.
Well, talking about that.
Might like the read.
Talking about that. We've got a new listener. She tweeted us.
Ooh.
I'll call her a lass because she likes to talk in a Geordie voice because she's not a Geordie, obviously.
Right.
She's called Katie and she is a radio presenter and that kind of thing over here.
Right.
And she started a podcast called the Grief Relief Podcast. Which has had its first episode out last week, which I listened to. I know her because we've done some work together in the past. She's great, lovely, and we get on really well. And she's starting a podcast, so I sent her a message. She was like, didn't know that we did one. Her podcasts are, on the face of it, a bit more serious than ours because both of her parents died, and it's kind of about dealing with that.
Right.
But it's funny. It's like her and her brothers and other people. Like the first episode's really funny talking about like things that they did to get over it and stuff like that. Anyway,
yeah.
Give it a listen, people, if you want to. It's really good. She has been listening to a lot of our episodes and messaging us going, I've just listened to this one, whatever. And then she sent us a message saying, just as a tip, I'm listening to some of the first ones. And the levels are so off that when you listen to one, the song's really loud, but then we're really quiet, so she turns it right up. And then the next one starts, and then the song's fucking incredibly loud and like,
right.
So I said, well, to be honest, we didn't know what we were doing with the levels and stuff when we first started. I think it's a bit better. But also, I had no idea anybody would listen to more than one in a row.
It does happen.
Apparently it happens, so I'm sorry anybody who's done that, and we've blasted you, but I think I've sorted it out now.
Do you think we're on the same level now?
I think we're always on the same level, but I think we're on the same level as the music now.
I think spiritually we're on the same level.
I think so. Moral wise, obviously I've got higher morals than you.
Yeah, well done. But you're low on stature.
I am low on stature. I'm not a duke, so there you go.
That is true.
Am I a knave? Is that what I am?
What's that like? A navel?
Yeah, it's as low as a belly button.
have I told you about the rollers?
I mean, I don't know what you mean by that. So,
well, I wouldn't imagine that you would know unless I told you because I made it up.
Okay.
When Lennon was very, very small, right? When you get in the bath with your child and stuff like that. Do you ever find that you have a large amount of fluff in your belly button? Does that ever happen to you?
I think I can't remember it happening recently. In the past, certainly, but maybe I've resolved the issue. but I get a lot on the feet because I don't wear socks or slippers, and I have very dusty, fluffy floors.
See? So when Leonard was small, he used to say, well, what's that in your belly button, Dad? And I used to show him the fluff on my belly button as you do. And what I told him was that in the middle of the night, there's these very, very small creatures who live on me skin called the rollers, who roll me dead skin into me belly button.
Why do they live on your skin, though?
Well, to clean us and to put the fluff in the belly button.
They could just come out of wherever they live at night and do it. Like, they didn't have to live on your skin.
Well, they live on me
like
skin.
Like the Paul Simon song, Allergies. Allergies, something living on my skin.
Yeah, bit like dust mites.
Yeah, I mean...
they're a little bit like them.
I'll be honest, I don't think it's a great story for young Lennon.
He loved the story. I mean, I didn't say the word dust mites, because have you ever seen the picture of a dust mite? It's awful.
Well, what you mean when you
enlarged. You're like enlarged that under a microscope?
I mean, it's horrible. Probably it is one of the most horrible images anyone can see.
Well, here's another image for you. They're all over your feet because of your fluffy floors.
Well, you see, I think of it as like, you know, when people in the early 2000s and late 90s used to go in them shops and put their feet in fish tanks.
Oh, no, that's weird.
That you could see from the outside.
That is so mental, that.
That's what I think the dust mites are all for.
There's no way I'd want fish eating me dead skin. I mean, the rollers are bad enough, aren't they? But not the fish, no way.
Yeah. I don't like any of that. I'm sure I was going to talk about something serious before I got onto all this, brother.
Not again.
Yep. You know me. Always bringing it down.
Because I've got some very stupid questions to ask you. Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Question number one.
Do it.
Cliff, have you ever considered plastic surgery? Not that you require it, not in your current state anyway, but like in the future, do you think that you'd do it?
I have often thought that I would have my man breasts removed somehow. Not entirely, but like the fat bits of them taken out. Yeah,
because I quite like them.
And that's all right. You've never kissed them, though, have you? Like,
No, I've never kissed them. I've never kissed them. I've always wanted to kiss them, but I've never... sort of, you know, got the courage to do it. I wish I had it done. The reason I ask is, say, I was watching Pointless and there was two girls from TOWIE on, right?
Okay.
And they both looked exactly the same as each other. I mean, they weren't related or anything, but they were just exactly the same.
If they want to do it, all right, but it looks a bit daft.
Yeah. No individuality, is there? In that program. Cliff, what is the most succulent meal you've ever eaten? What do you think? Because you've eaten, I mean, you're a foodie, aren't you? Well, I've said it before, I'll say it again.
Go on, well, I have no doubt. The most succulent meal I've ever had.
Yes, succulent.
I had an entire aloe vera plant once.
You mean the succulent? Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean, yeah.
I had a porterhouse steak in a hotel once, which was like an elephant's leg. And that was quite succulent. Other than that, it's got to just be Greg's, I reckon.
What's your favourite?
What's my favourite? I think I'd go for the good old cheese pasty.
Hey, I've heard rumour that they've like removed the pasty name now and they're all bakes.
Actually, they've sneaked that on us, haven't they?
What?
But I still call them pasties.
What a fucking disgrace that is.
That is.
Do you remember how I used to hate steak bakes when they first came in? Yeah, I used to go mad about it. It's a good job I'm not in England now, because every branch of Greg's would be feeling me wrath.
They would.
They removed perfectly good peppered steak pie to make way for what is essentially a steak pasty. Nobody wants a steak pasty, does that? Stupid. No,
pasties are much better. I wonder what that man thinks about it, who had the picture of a pigeon in his coat. I wonder what he makes of all this.
I think
the loss of the pasties.
He just cares about the pre-packed bread buns. That's all he cares about.
It's just for my bird.
Oh, do you want to see a picture of me bird? What a man. To be honest, Brett, I would imagine he's dead.
Oh, right. That's unfortunate. And the last question for you, Cliff, is this one. If it could happen, if you were signed for Leeds tomorrow, right, do you think that they'd make you have that stupid haircut with the man bun?
Yeah, I think it's de rigueur. You know how he signs players, but it's like months before they're in the team. Well, you know why that is. People are saying it's because he's got to get used to the tactics and fit enough. No, he's got to grow a tiny amount of hair that can only just be put in a ponytail. Just a tiny
amount. Shaved at the sides.
Yep.
That's a prerequisite.
What?
It's in the contracts.
What do you think drives young men from northern, like, mill towns?
Mill towns.
Yep, northern mill towns. Yeah, like, Rotherham's. Yeah, Doncaster's. Just suddenly think, I'm going to have that haircut. It's like Towie, but for football, isn't it?
I think it's Uber that drives them.
Like Jack Harrison. Why does he look like that? Bamford.
They all look like that. That Phillips looks like that. The two fullbacks look like that. I pointed it out to my lass. She was disgusted. So we were watching Leeds. Well, she was disgusted in the fact that they had these haircuts. And I think we were watching it on Monday. And I think they were playing against Wolves when the Wolves lads had a shot. And wouldn't you know, it deflected off one of the people with the haircut, deflected off their heads into the goal. Now, it's their own fault, isn't it? it's the own fault.
Do you think Bielsa must be just like kind of just mumbling to himself about that haircut all the time?
I think he
was shouting at the bucket about it and then turned it
that is down. What he mumbles about. I don't think he mumbled before the Leeds player started to grow these haircuts, but now he's just disgusted with it all, isn't he? Fucking haircuts. I'm sick of these fucking haircuts. Where's me bucket?
Funny
he's good
man.
Bielsa though, isn't he?
He's incredible. Incredible. I mean, the fact that he's Leeds manager really means he probably could have been anyone's manager. You know what I mean?
I know.
He could have been like Ipswich manager or something
He could have been
exactly.
Sullivan's manager. I mean, imagine if that had happened. I wouldn't mind if my players had that haircut and weren't rubbish.
If he was the manager.
if he was the manager. I think that's right.
Phil Parkinson's not going to say have a haircut but also be good, is he? He's going to say our team is the most nondescript bunch of players I've ever seen in my life. It's shocking. Obviously, I haven't been to a game for a long time because I've been here. But even if I was at a game, I don't think I could tell who anyone was. Like apart from the ogre up front, I wouldn't know who anyone is.
Cottage cheese, try it once and then you'll agree that cottage cheese is the only cheese guaranteed to please.
Well, it's the only cheese that lives in the top.
What about Wensleydale?
Yes, right enough. Well, it's Dairy. Wensleydale's just a normal block of cheese.
It's Wensleydale?
It's Dairy Lee.
It's not Dairy Lee. It's Wensleydale.
Well, anybody who doesn't realise we've nicked that. That's one of our favourite Vic and Bob songs that we've got wrong. Oh, Brett's got wrong.
No, I haven't got it wrong.
But it was unplanned. But you obviously planned it and you got the words wrong.
No, I didn't.
Anyway, on that note,
Yes.
Let's talk about the film we're going to talk about today. I will introduce it, and you can talk about it because it's your thing. I'm going to ask you some questions because you're the one who knows all about it. So we're going to talk about John Carpenter's 1981, what's it called, dystopian future action thriller, Escape from New York, starring Kurt Russell and an amazing supporting cast. Amazing supporting cast. I'll talk a little bit about what I thought of it because this is the first time I've watched it properly. One of those, seeing clips of it on the telly late at night, come in late from the pub or whatever. I never watched the full thing. This is the first time I've ever seen it. Brett, it's one of your favourite films. Why did you want to do it?
It is. I wanted to do it because it is fantastic. It's unbelievable. I love it. I don't just love this film by John Carpenter. I love all John Carpenter's films. It's quite weird because the first memory that I have of watching a film with my parents, must have been about 3 or 4 or something, was Assault on Precinct 13,
good
on the TV. Yeah, and that's my first memory. And obviously I grew up through the 80s and stuff like that. What's inappropriate?
Watching, it was 3, 4-year-old watching Assault on Precinct 13.
Well, yeah, probably was, but it's my first memory of watching something. But I mean, growing up through the 80s, I used to, you know, all these films that he made stuck out in my mind. I didn't know there were John Carpenter's films at the time, even though it had sort of, you know, on the credits and stuff, John Carpenter's.
Okay, when you're a kid,
this John Carpenter's that. Yeah, when you're a kid, you don't realize that kind of stuff. But when I got a little bit older, obviously, I realized it was the same guy. Sort of making all these films that I loved. I remember going to school and saying, did you see that film where the guy found the glasses and he put the glasses on and like he could see that everybody were aliens? And everybody was like, no, you made that up.
No, because it's inappropriate for children of that age, that's why.
I mean, this was when I was in junior school, I think. But there was another time where I said, "Oh, did you see this other film where it's absolutely fantastic? It's Kurt Russell's in it, and there's loads of kung fu fighting and stuff like that, and there's three guys in it who look like the characters from Mortal Kombat, and like everybody in the school was talking about this film, how mental it was and stuff.
Obviously,
Big Trouble in Little China. But all the films, I loved them, and then when I worked out that it was the same guy making them." I was just blown away, and even more blown away, I guess, when I realized like he wrote them as well and he did the music for them. It's like unbelievable. He's a genius.
And being a horror fan, presumably at some point you saw Halloween as well, and
yeah,
whether you knew that was him at the time or whatever, presumably you love that film as well.
I love all of his films. I mean, there's not one that I don't like.
Really?
I love
Ghosts of Mars?
The thing is with John Carpenter, right, people bring up, like, you know, the sort of lesser-liked ones in the 90s and stuff like that. But nobody does that with Spielberg, do they? Nobody goes, oh, did you see Lincoln? Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know why? Because the answer is no, I didn't, because it's about 4 hours long and it was fucking shit.
But do you know what I mean? I think
I agree with you. I said that about Ghosts of Mars. I don't know. I've never seen it. And it gets panned. But,
it's not one of my favorite John Carpenter films, but director makes ones that you really love or you don't like as much.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not somebody who's going to wax lyrical about Spielberg. I appreciate he's made some of the best received and most people's most favorite films of all time. I don't really watch his films very much, but I mean, Jaws, I would watch if it was on.
Yeah.
Couldn't give a fuck about E.T., to be honest. But obviously people love him, and he's a great people. I get
that. Yes, sir.
But I 100% agree with you what you're saying, and I haven't seen all of John Carpenter's films, but I know the big ones. He's just the same in my eyes, just a different genre or a different style of filmmaking. If he was fucking French or something like that, he'd be regarded as or Italian. He'd be like Dario Argento or something. People would be studying his films and waxing lyrical about them all the time. But he's seen as a bit of like a B-movie guy, isn't he? When I think that's pretty unfair.
that's massively unfair. I think he said himself that in England he's like, you know, he's regarded as like a poet or something, and in Europe he's regarded as a genius, but in America he's regarded as a bum. It's like, it's an American thing, do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of it's come from like critics and stuff like that, especially with The Thing, because most of his films are like independent films where yeah. he's like Halloween and the one we're going to talk about Escape from New York,
yeah.
where he's done it on like a shoestring budget, but it still looks massive and amazing. Mm-hmm. It looks better
than these.
Yeah, it looks better than these sort of studio films. And then when he did do a studio film, which was The Thing, everybody hated it because it was way ahead of its time. It shocked people. Do you know what I mean?
The Thing's amazing. I know it's your favorite film.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's incredible. It's an absolutely incredible film.
It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Why wouldn't people like it on the back of this? It's better than this. I like this film, but it's better than this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they're like, oh, he's Halloween absolutely broke boundaries, the way it was shot, what it's about, all of that stuff. This film, oh, he's done an action film on like, it's a hugely ambitious action film, but on a tiny, tiny budget. But also uh-huh. he's got all of these kind of real character actors and some stars and stuff to be in it. Uh-huh. Okay, well, let's give him a deal and let him make this film. And everyone's like, terrible. Like, I don't understand it.
It's because it really did shock people. I mean, we're going to do The Thing when it's me birthday, because we're going to pick our favorite one, aren't we?
Okay.
But what happened was when it came out, I think ET came out before it and made everybody sort of feel very happy about aliens and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? It's a nice film and a good film. I mean, I like ET. And then The Thing came out and it was completely the opposite, and it really shocked people. Do you know, that's why people didn't like it. The critics didn't like it as well. I mean, they panned the film, and it's
even
honestly, it's
Kurt Russell's glasses.
Even his glasses.
They're the best.
I think that
a bit of outfit in any film.
Well, I think everything, you know, with that film's great. But I also think that everything with this one's great.
Yeah,
as well.
So we're not here to talk about The Thing. We'll get into that on another episode. Escape from New York. I mean, it's quintessential John Carpenter from my opinion of it. But what about John Carpenter? Tell people what it is, like why it's John Carpenter, how you know it is.
Well, I mean, there's certain things that, you know, you can just tell it's John Carpenter. I mean, first of all, I mean, the way it looks. I mean, he's got the cinematographer who works on this film, works on other, you know, these films as well, Dean Cundey.
We'll talk about him later, I think. We'll talk about him now if you want. The plot of the film is genius in its simplicity. If you tell the plot of this film to anyone, they're going to go, that sounds fucking brilliant. So the president is on Air Force One. A group of protesters have hijacked it. And he's on his way to peace talks with China and Russia over some arms problems, obviously. These protesters hijack it and it ends up crashing in Manhattan. But in Manhattan at that time is entirely a maximum security prison behind huge walls. And he's basically he's there, and the guy who runs the show in this prison / Manhattan captures him and is going to kill him. So the government want to get him back because he's got to make it. He's got 24 hours or 12 hours or something to make it to these peace talks because he's got a tape that he needs to play. And it's of utmost important that he plays this tape. You don't really know what it is, but he has to play this tape. So they need to get him back so they can get this tape, take it to the peace talks, and the world will be saved. So they send Snake Plissken in, former special forces man, now convict. They insert two explosives into his bloodstream that if he doesn't make it out in time, he'll explode from the inside out.
Now all of this premise, right? This is the start of the film. all of this premise, like you've just said, is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like you've just said. I mean, if you went into, like, you know, you were pitching a film to some guy or whatever, and you said, well, this is the premise of the film, and you've just explained it. And then he's got to do it because he's got these things sort of in his neck which are going to explode. Everything that you've just described there is absolutely class.
Yeah, brilliant.
I mean, that is exactly what I want to watch.
And also, by the way, he's going to be called Snake Plissken. And he's going to be played by a really buff Kurt Russell, who's going to be wearing an eye patch. What, the baddie?
Exactly.
The baddie? Isaac Hayes. Right, all right. All right.
Brilliant. Let's do that. I mean, it's just, it is like fantasy stuff, isn't it? But you obviously, John Carpenter looked at it that way as well. What can I put in? What can I make this small film seem like it's a massive that's film? What, and it does look like a massive film.
Yeah, that's what I got out of it, is that he's gone, I'm going to show them I can make a massive film, even though I haven't got a budget to do it. That's the opinion I got. And I think, like I said, we'll talk about the cinematographer. Hit. What's his name again? Peter Cundy.
Dean Cundy.
The job he does on this film is just unbelievable. He makes this low-budget film that's shot in kind of, well, in a rundown city in the dark. look amazing. And he uses techniques, the lighting that he uses, this kind of overexposed lighting the camera and stuff that he uses to make he's shooting in the dark, but it's kind of bleeding out so it looks light, as light as you can possibly get these shots in the dark, which give it this kind of comic book kind of quality, I think. And obviously this guy's gone on to be the cinematographer on some of my favorite films and some of the greatest films of all time.
I mean, he's class. I mean, The Thing's very similar as well. He works on that. I mean, a lot of John Carpenter films he works on. And he's just brilliant at his job. I mean, that's dark, but I like my films in the dark. You know what I mean? But that's the good thing about John Carpenter as well. He surrounds himself with really talented people. Do you know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned, John Carpenter's a genius. But he surrounds himself with these sort of really talented people as well, like,
well, you that's genius trust, in itself, isn't it? Like, you can't.
Of course, just, it is.
But making sure you've got people that can, or better than you, at the things that you want to achieve. Like,
And I mean, the other thing with this film as well, I don't know if you know about this, but obviously it's set in New York, but it's not filmed in New York.
Yeah.
Not the exterior shots. Certainly not. It's St. Louis.
Yeah.
And what happened was there was in the 70s, I think 1977, there was a big, massive fire which gutted, you know, the whole sort of a massive area of St. Louis. And what they were able to do was just go in and use those derelict sort of buildings and stuff like that. I mean, it was like for blocks and blocks and blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you, but they obviously had to you've do got to like night. It. You've got to be able to see it. Yeah. But I mean, you've got to be able to see that on the camera, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? And that's where the lightning and sort of Dean Cundy comes into it, because it's just amazing. But I think when you watch John Carpenter films, you know what you're watching. You know it's John Carpenter.
Yeah, he's an auteur.
You know it?
That quote that you referenced before, I think it's slightly different. He says, in France, I'd be an auteur. In the US, I'm a genre director. And he is an auteur. If you look at like these directors like Wes Anderson, the Coen brothers, like modern examples of auteurs, what's his name, Paul Thomas Anderson, I guess, you're watching their films, you know they're their films because they look and feel a certain way, the dialogue's in a certain way, the actors are often the same actors in all these films. John Carpenter operates like that, but because they're kind of like action films or horror films, slashers and stuff like that, it's thought of as being like less important, but I think that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I mean, that's certainly not the case for me, because I adore all these films. I mean, I have from growing up, like I said, they've always been in the back of my head. You know what I mean? Starman and stuff like that. They live. And
I didn't realize Starman was John Carpenter, by the way. I absolutely love Starman. Like Jeff Bridges, obviously. Like I remember that from being a kid. I had no idea that was John Carpenter about a week ago, and I was looking into like, I know the he's big ones that he hangs his hat on, or that people do like Halloween, this, Big Trouble in Little China. There's a couple more that we mentioned before, but I didn't. But then in between them, there's loads of ones that actually aren't these kind of like beam. Movie like schlocky ones, or what I thought of was schlocky ones. So you think actually that's a family film, and that's a good sci-fi film, and that's like and I had no idea that he also was behind some of these other films, and he's
definitely. I mean, he's got range. Do you know what I mean? He's a genius. Have you seen Elvis?
Well, that's the other thing I didn't know. I absolutely love that. That is, you know, I love it's Elvis, and. There's a few of these kind of TV movie biopics of these rock stars and stuff that I think are excellent. Gary Busey is Buddy Holly's one. But this Elvis with Kurt Russell as Elvis for about for the first of about four Elvis roles in his career. I remember watching that when I was a teenager, like after I really got into Elvis and absolutely loving it.
It's great. So
Kurt Russell was fucking incredible in it. The range of it, like it's happy, it's sad. There's some great musical sequences in it, and obviously it's this like TV movie biopic that's on for about 4.5 hours in two parts.
Yeah.
And again, it was only last week when I was looking into this that
you realised
that was John Carpenter. I mean, how's John Carpenter directed that? Really? Like, it doesn't really make any sense. Like after Halloween. Dark Star Halloween, Elvis for the TV, then Escape from New York.
I mean, obviously, John Carpenter, he loves music. Do you know what I mean? He's massive Beatles and Elvis as well and stuff like that. I was watching an interview where he said, you know, his family didn't have a TV or anything like that, but he went to a friend's house and watched Elvis on the Ed Sullivan show. You know, and that had like a big impact on him and stuff. But yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, I remember watching that Elvis when I was about 8, because it was on. I even remember what channel it was on. It was on ITV, and it was on in two different parts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So maybe that was remember when I watching saw it as well.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I watched it with my parents, and it's really odd. All of these films, I remember the first time that I watched them. Do you know what I mean? That's the weird thing. I mean, some people might say that, you know, Spielberg, they remember when they watched Jaws or whatever, or, you know, George Lucas, Star Wars and stuff, but it's not those ones for me. It's all of these John Carpenter films. And the other thing, which we haven't talked about yet, but is massive for me, is the music. Yeah. I mean, the music's amazing. This soundtrack for this film alone, is my favourite of the John Carpenter soundtracks, but it's brilliant all the way through.
Awesome. Yeah, his films are amazing. I think me and you both like this style of music, and I think, that, like I've mentioned before, there's a record label called Spun Out of Control, which essentially specialises in soundtracks of this style for kind of made-up films. So they'll come up with a concept of what this film's about, like a Death Wish or a Halloween or whatever, version like you say an 80s film, very John Carpenter, and then a musician or a band will do a soundtrack to this imaginary film. And I mean, not just that, there's other people who make this kind of synth wavy stuff, which I guess is what it's called now. It's quite popular again now, but I mean, people talk about Brian Eno being a pioneer of electronic music and Kraftwerk and stuff like that. Like genuinely, and Giorgio Moroder, probably the most person you can compare it to. But John Carpenter doesn't really get put in that bracket on that side of things either. But if he was Angelo Badalamenti and he just made the music for this, people would be raving about it. But it's because it's like he's a director, and that he does the music is like he also does the music. But if it was a different person doing the music, that person would probably be like famous in their own right. It's a bit of unfortunate, I think.
He's almost like too good, isn't he? It's like he's taking the piss. You know what I mean? He's directing these films, he's writing them, he's doing everything. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, my favorite John Carpenter sort of track is the theme from Assault from Precinct 13 on Precinct 13. And I was watching an interview today, and he did the whole soundtrack in a day, one day.
Ha! Amazing.
For that film. I mean, he wasn't even watching, you know, the film while he was doing the soundtrack or anything like that. It was just all in his head. I mean, that's just like, that's Beatles level sort of genius, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, it is to me anyway.
I agree. He deserves more. I mean, it's not like he's thought of as a joke, but he's not thought of as one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, one of the greatest soundtrack composers, musicians of all time. He's still fairly cult. He's a cult concern. He's got a huge army of fans, obviously, and those people really love him. But most, the man on the street doesn't know him like they know.
I went to see him in Manchester. I've seen him twice. I've seen him in Manchester and I've seen him in Newcastle. Both brilliant gigs, absolutely fantastic. He plays with his son, Cody Carpenter, who we might hear a little bit about later on. But both the gigs were absolutely brilliant, absolutely fantastic. But before I got there, I was in a bar. Sutherland were playing. And we're playing Arsenal. We've got Tant. We've got 4-1. And these Burnley supporters were behind me in this Manchester bar. And they were wanting Sutherland to get beat because at the time they were like relegation rivals or whatever. Yeah. And we had some kind of interaction. I think Sunderland got a penalty, and these Burnley fans were going, "Oh, that's not a penalty." And I turned around and sort of went, "Of course it is." Do you know what I mean? And they kind of went, "Well, you know, what do you care? I'm a Sunderland fan." And, "Oh, right. What are you here for?" I says, "Well, I'm here to watch John Carpenter." And they went, "John Carpenter? Who's that?" Now, like, you know, he made Halloween, and I mean, he's made The Thing and stuff like that. Yeah, don't know who he is. So, what?
I mean,
I just couldn't believe it.
Burnley fans, so probably don't know that much.
Yeah, you're Burnley fan. Sorry, Danny. I'll not be happy with that. But, I mean, then we got to the gig, and it was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever seen. It was
rammed. What's the gigs like then? What does he do? He's
playing the keyboard. So what happens in the gig is he'll play the themes from all of his films and stuff. He also has other albums called Lost Themes, which are sort of, you know, songs from films that he could have made or should have made.
Which is a bit like that record label.
Yeah,
that I'm on
a bit like what you said. So, I mean, we get the gig, and when he's playing and stuff like that, the sort of clips of the films are playing in the background, and it's absolutely amazing. It blew me mind. But when we got there, I mean, the queues were massive and stuff like that. I mean, I've got signed sort of records of John Carpenter on my wall and things like that. But there's people sort of dressed up as the characters, so there was like loads of snakes there. Do you know people in sort of cosplay and things?
Yeah,
there was the best one that I saw was, if you can think back to The Thing, you know where they're sitting on the chair in The Thing after the blood test, which is like the most horrific thing ever. I think it's Windows.
He
hands droop and stuff like that, and he's got like a skeletal face. There was somebody dressed up as that, and it was like the best thing I'd ever seen. I mean, like, it was so unbelievable, absolutely class. So it's like an event, these things, and it was I think it was the day before Halloween as well. So.
Oh, great. So
that's good.
Talk about John Carpenter, we've talked about the music, we've talked about the cinematography. We haven't really talked a lot about the film itself. And while we won't go into the plot and all of this happened, then that happened, then that happened, because essentially he gets dropped into New York to save the president. And New York's essentially run by Isaac Hayes, who's the Duke, which is amazing. And there's a sort of cast of weirdos who kind of just live there and get on with it. And then there's people who, like these scavenger people that come out the drains and like nick stuff on a night. Yeah, the crazies. And then there seems to be just some people who just try and like stay out of trouble. And then Isaac Hayes has got his heavies. and people know who Snake Plissken is when he goes in there.
Oh, that's the good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think John Carpenter, he loves Westerns. Mm-hmm. That's his thing. And this film's almost like a Western, isn't it? But just set in the future.
Yeah, future, which, by the way, is 1997. Obviously, was the future, but very much in the future in 1981.
Well, if they had to just fast forward it a couple of years, I mean, New York is a little bit like a prison now, isn't it? You know, the stuff that's going on now, the COVID and everything, they're all escaping themselves, aren't they?
Yeah.
From New York. So yeah, I mean, that's what happens.
He's like the man with no name, isn't he? So basically, I've read a little bit into it, and actually, I've kind of always thought this from... like when I'd seen a bit of it before, and certainly from watching it properly this time before I did a bit of reading around it, that Kurt Russell bases these characters, these mannerisms and his voice and stuff on Clint Eastwood in the Spaghetti Western trilogy. So Isaac Hayes gets wind of him coming and sends his guys to get him. And he ends up in a massive, in a boxing / wrestling match.
Well, before that, he meets a guy called Brain, doesn't he? Who he knows previously from the outside world.
Yeah, which is Harry Dean Stanton.
Who's also amazing, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's just amazing in everything, isn't he?
Has he ever been young?
He always looks the same, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's weird. He is absolutely fantastic, isn't he? He's absolutely great. But he meets Brain, who, like you say, is Harry Dean Stanton, and he sort of knows where the president is because he's in with sort of the Duke of New York, A number one, obviously, because he's making gas for him and stuff. But Snake already knows who he is because he's previously done a job with him and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, that wrestling bit, I was watching the sort of the commentary and stuff like that, which if anybody likes John Carpenter, the commentary over the sort of Blu-rays and stuff like that's amazing. It's absolutely class. This one, he's sitting with Kurt Russell and that, and they're just having a laugh, basically, talking about the film. But the guy who was an actual wrestler, and he tried to kill Kurt Russell. He tried to beat the shit out of him. And, like, obviously there's a part in the script where Kurt Russell overcomes this wrestler guy, but he wasn't having that. He didn't like that. He didn't want to get beat. So he was, like, battering Kurt Russell and stuff. Made him,
Even though it's happening.
So Kurt Russell had to sort of say to him, you need to calm down. It's not wrestling. We're happening here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't calm down. So he had to tap him on the balls and say, look, if you do it again, I'm going to walk in the ball. I'm going to get you. So, it's obviously there's a sense of realism in for that as well.
Yeah, there is. Kurt Russell wouldn't like that. The sense of realism in that it's, and I think the low budget kind of thing like plays into that. It looks like it's really happening. And it's a weird thing to try and describe. Because it's not realism, because it's in this post-apocalyptic.
I mean, it's complete fantasy, isn't it? But
basically,
there's a sense of realism there, I think.
Yeah, there is. And Russell's, he also meets a lady who I think is entirely made of breasts. Was that fair?
Entirely made of breasts. You want to be careful what you say, because we've got our son doing the song later.
But in this film, she's just like, it's just boobs, like it's just boobs and a gun, like running around. It's classic. That is kind of classic B movie stuff, I think.
I mean,
but she is good in it. But our outfit is like fairly exploitative, I would say.
Yeah, Adrienne Barbeau. I mean, she was like a pinup.
She's
brilliant. She was like a pinup, wasn't she? And John Carpenter was married while they were making this film as well.
And Kurt Russell was married to the other lady in it.
That's right, and Chock Full of Nuts, the girl in Chock Full of Nuts who gets eaten by the crazies.
A superb name for a place. The stage show that goes on is incredible. Mm-hmm. And also, That's where we meet Airwolf. Ernest Borgnine.
Mean Cubby.
Yes.
He's class, isn't he?
Ernest Borgnine is brilliant in this. I mean, what an actor. There's just some great people in this. And we should also, one other guy that certainly deserves mention, who's the guy that sends him in, Lee Van Cleef. In there because he's in the Spaghetti Western trilogy, and that's what you know. He's a he's also in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. He's a Western, like old school Western star. He is fucking brilliant in this, and he's the guy who basically makes sure that Plissken gets in there and does it. He's calling the shots. He's superb. Uh-huh. It's a great bit of callback to the fact that the film's based on these Westerns. Russell,
you know you know who else is absolutely class as well? Frank Doubleday, who's Romero. He's got like the Sonic the Hedgehog sort of. Brilliant. Yeah, he's absolutely good. Class.
He's kind of the most out there looking person in it, isn't he?
He's the one that you know when it starts and when sort of we get into the prison. He's the one that introduces you to almost you know. See what the rest of the characters are going to be in the prison.
Yeah.
So and he's brilliant at it as well. He's almost got those filed teeth and
And I would say that you'll tell us if I'm wrong here. I'm sure. I know that Carpenter really loved Michael Winner's Death Wish. That he, you know, the feel of this and the violence and stuff in it was kind of based on that. But
he didn't like the premise. That's what he didn't.
No,
like.
No, he didn't like it. Yeah,
didn't
like what the film was actually about.
but
there's got to be. He must have seen Mad Max at this point. He must have seen it because this is very. Or maybe Mad Max Beyond, like the second Mad Max 2, and this seem very similar. But I haven't looked into whether they're the same time.
I mean, Mad Max 2 would have been 85, I think. After this,
When was Mad Max 1? The first one?
Not sure. I think it might have been around. It might have been 80. Yeah,
that was similar, like look and feel, I think. But Mad Max 2, I would imagine, has gone. Actually, what can we do with it? This is a good idea and take it on from there.
I think that's more like it, isn't it? That sort of, you know, they've taken from this because there's no doubt that this film has inspired, you know, other films. The soundtrack's inspired sort of other things as well. I mean, it's massively influential. I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, the other thing that we haven't talked about as well is like the imagery, the computer imagery, which isn't actually computer imagery at the start.
No, it's weird.
And the special effects are unbelievable. And they're all, or most of them, are like matte paintings and stuff. Yeah. So they're things that people have painted. Mm-hmm. Not just people, because James Cameron is the guy who painted the matte paintings and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of talent like working on this film, it's like off the charts.
It really is. We won't go into what happens at the end, but obviously he finds the president and he tries to break
out. Just have?
Obviously he's going to find the president.
He's going to find the president, man. It's a class ending. It's Snake against the man, isn't it?
And Kurt Russell's so cool at the end.
He's the perfect outlaw. And the other thing is that obviously, you know, John Carpenter worked with Kurt Russell on Elvis and stuff, and he had to push really hard to get Kurt Russell into the role. You know, I think it was Avco. They didn't want him. Tommy Lee Jones
or Charles Bronson.
I know.
Fucking hell!
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
It was being ridiculous.
It's another example of like John Carpenter sort of forward thinking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of those actor-director relationships that happened with actors like Scorsese and De Niro and DiCaprio these days.
But to see that from a guy who was in like Disney films and stuff, because that's all Kurt Russell was in previously. Yeah. He was like a Disney kid, wasn't he? To cast him in like Elvis and then see something in him and then cast him as like an action hero. I was growing up, one of the greatest characters ever. When I was growing up in the 80s, I saw Kurt Russell as an action hero.
Yeah.
I didn't see him. I mean, it took a while later to sort of realise he was a Disney kid or whatever.
I didn't know about the Disney stuff, but I think I probably thought of them as like the romantic lead in like Overboard and Captain Ron and stuff like that. But I hadn't seen these when I was a kid because they're for adults.
But he was always just the badass Snake for me. Like,
so yeah, I loved it. I loved it. Absolutely loved
it. I'm glad you liked it.
I can't believe I've never actually watched it all the way through before. I love everything about it. The music, what it looks like, what it plays like, who's in it. To be honest, I probably love the supporting cast more than Kurt Russell.
Did you?
I love Kurt Russell in it, but just like Ernest Borgnine, Lee Van Cleef, Harry Dean Stanton, Isaac Hayes, and there's more, you know, there's more guys in it. Like you said, Sonic the Hedgehog guy and all of these other ones. It's just great. And it just makes us want to watch more Carpenter films again.
Don't be disappointed. Don't be disappointed, because I'm sure that we'll do that in the future.
Yeah,
because like, he's my favorite.
Yeah, so. Of course. So that's the end of that. Thank you. I've got a quiz.
Ooh, I almost forgot about the quiz. I was enjoying talking about John Carpenter a little bit too much there.
I know. Well, now your enjoyment will end because you've got.
Oh
a quiz.
No!
This quiz is about film characters with eye patches, and it's called "Tell Us the Name of the." I'll tell you the name of the character.
What's it called, Cliff?
I'll tell you the name of the character. You tell me either and or the name of the actor and the film if you want, or the other one.
Was that whiskey you were drinking?
Good name for a quiz, that, isn't it?
Was that whiskey you were drinking?
It's like a Jack Daniel's substitute. It's called... can't remember what it's called, but actually it's really nice.
Right. I've got one called Firewater.
And which I think it works.
I think it does. Benchmark. Tell you what,
it's called Benchmark.
Benchmark, is it? Is that because you shit yourself when you're sitting on the bench? I'll tell you what, the next podcast, I'll have a whiskey as well, will you?
Okay.
Let's do that.
Thank you.
Right. So I have no idea what this is.
I'm going to say a character in a film, and that character wears an eye patch.
I heard that bit, but I didn't know the title.
The title got muddled, to be honest. You can tell me what film it is.
Right, I'll try.
And or the person who plays that character. So the first one, L Driver. It's a lady with an eye patch.
It's not like Mini Driver.
Like Learner Driver.
Buffer. Little chauffeur.
Like Learner Driver? L Driver.
Yeah, are you going to offer up any clues to this?
It's a lady.
That isn't a clue.
Come on.
Serve them up.
It's a baddie.
Mm-hmm.
Taking on another lady, martial arts lady.
Right, is it Kill Bill or someone like that?
It is, yeah.
Right, ooh, that's good. And the eye patch is probably in there because Tarantino loves Carpenter, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So that's probably why it is. Do you know that the Hateful Eight is based on The Thing?
Well, I mean, it's almost the same film, isn't it?
Well, that's what it is. I watched it a few years ago, and I was like, for the very reason that it was based on The Thing, and I was like, yeah, it's not really though, is it?
I know, but it's just like, oh, it's snowy and Kurt Russell, and there's people in a one place. Like,
yeah, that's it.
But there's so many films that you could say are like based on The Thing because it's so pioneering and copied so much.
There's the Morricone music in it, definitely.
Anyway. It's Daryl Hannah in Kill Bill.
Right,
she has a fight with Uma Thurman. Right, number two. The character is called Daniel Big Dan Tig.
Daniel Big Dan Tig.
He's a man. He's a big man. And he's called Dan. And he wears an eye patch.
Right. Well, I got that because the quiz is about people with eye patches. Just recapping. No, I'm not the wiser with this one.
Because he's meant to signify that he's a Cyclops. Yeah.
He's meant to signify that he's a Cyclops, or he is a Cyclops.
Oh, no, he's just... It's John Goodman.
Why would a Cyclops need an eye patch?
In Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is loosely
You know I haven't seen that film. You know I haven't seen that film because I've mentioned it before.
I know, I was writing that question. I thought, is this the film he said he hasn't seen?
So I'll deliberately put it in. It's Feral Goes West in these questions.
Fievel Goes West.
Yeah, that's him. Not Feral, because that's like a wild animal.
He was a feral little mouse. Fievel Goes Feral.
Does he have an eye patch?
No, but I think we should try and make Fievel Goes Feral.
That's the sequel, isn't it? Fievel Goes Feral. Twice.
I think he has an eye patch. One of them. Or there is one with an eye patch.
There's definitely a mouse with an eye patch, isn't there?
Okay, number three.
Yeah.
The character is called Emilio Largo.
Right.
I don't know this. So
you wrote the fucking question.
I know
you've got
the answer
now,
but I wouldn't have known it until I started looking for this quiz.
Well, didn't you expect me to?
Sid James Bond in that, man.
Can I just say your quizzes, right? They're awful.
You like James Bond?
Come on. Is it? Is it Dr. No?
No, it's Thunderball. And the character, everybody knows, is... No, the actor, the character is Adolfo Largo. Emilio Largo. The character is Adolfo Chili. You know
Chili. Chili. Adolfo Chili.
Yeah.
Adolfo Chili. No, I don't know him.
Okay, come on. Number... No, the last one. You'll be glad to know.
Oh, thank God. Thank God
is
for that.
One-Eyed Willie.
Does he? I just wear an eye patch, doesn't he? Hey, you guys! Is that a worthy answer?
It's the Goonies, yeah. One Eyed Willie. Thanks. Not played by anyone because it's a skeleton, but really, this entire thing was just so I could say One Eyed Willie at the end. Well done, Brett. You got 1 out of 5.
Terrible quiz. Terrible quiz. Terrible, 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 terrible quiz. Terrible quiz. Terrible quiz. Terrible, terrible, terrible,
right,
quiz.
It's the end. Should we wrap up? And I'm excited. I'm kind of racing to the end because I'm excited about the music we've got. So I'm excited because you've sorted this out. How you've sorted out, I've got no goddamn idea. But the music we're going to close today's show with is really exciting. So before we introduce it, thank you for listening, everyone. Follow us on Twitter. It's at FCircusPod. You can follow us on Facebook and join the chat on there. It's just the name of the podcast. Please listen to us. You can find us on everywhere. Amazon Music's creeping up the amount of places that's listened to. So you can listen to us on Amazon, good, Apple, everywhere. Give us a 5-star review if you want. Leave a comment. Tell us what you want to listen to, even if you want to suggest anything. We're happy with that. Mm-hmm. Have a big crack with us on Twitter. We're always on there. And that is, I think, how Brett came up with this next piece of music, which I'm sure he's very excited by, and I know I am. Forgive us if we've said the name of the band wrong, but I think it's Simulacron Lab with the Night Fight EP and the song Night Fight from that EP, which includes Cody Carpenter. John Carpenter's son.
Yay!
Yes. And this nice song is amazing, I think.
It is class.
And very much in the vein of John Carpenter's music, synth-wavy. Yeah. Really fits with what we're talking about. So if you like John Carpenter films, like his music, you'll certainly like Simulacron Lab and Cody Carpenter's music as well. He's a guest on this, but he also does stuff himself. Until next time, have a listen to this. This is Night Fight. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.